Welcome to selfdiscoveryradio.com, where the discovery of self is but a show away. With 1,000+ archive shows and new shows coming to you every Tuesday, we bring you illuminating people from around the globe. Visit our store for their services and books and enjoy the show.
Hi, everybody. My name is Nathan Aswell. Welcome to For the Love of Music. This is a show coming to you through Self Discovery Radio. I am based in White Rock, British Columbia, which is about 40 minutes south of Vancouver. And the mission of the show is to celebrate performers who consciously seek to inspire and heal through their music. And you're going to love the person I'm going to be speaking with today. Let me tell you a little bit about him. Craig Addy is a Canadian pianist and composer, and his training in music was very traditional. From an early age, he studied classical piano, music theory, and history. By his mid-20s, he had two music degrees, one from the University of British Columbia and one from the Royal Conservatory of Music in Toronto. However, during all those years of discipline studies, Craig was secretly exploring another world of music, the world of improvisation. Craig's style of improvisation is a unique blend of classical, new age, and popular. His improvisations are created in the moment with no predetermined harmonies, rhythms, or melodies. And Craig is going to talk about a few ways that he does that, and the one that I'm most excited about talking about is his Under the Piano project. But I'll leave that up to Craig himself to tell us about. Craig Addy, welcome.
Thank you. Hello.
And I would like to say right off the bat, let's give the person who connected us some love, Shannon Watson. Thank you so much. I regularly post shows, information about the shows on Facebook on Mondays, and Shannon was kind enough to connect you and I, and I'm very grateful to Shannon. So thank you, Shannon. Wanted to make you make sure
thank
that
you,
we send
Shannon.
Some love right off the top. So Craig, you are a very unique individual. I know many classical musicians, and yeah, it's not part of the gig to play notes that aren't written on the page.
Yes.
So what's up, man? Where did that come
well,
from?
Well, you know, first thing to say is it didn't used to be that way.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it used to be, you know, I think, you know, well into the, you know, towards the end of the 1800s, classical musicians could improvise.
Right.
And certainly the composers, or many of them are famous for that, you know, Bach, Chopin, Saint-Saëns, Beethoven, Mozart, they're all famous for it.
Yeah.
So what happened, hey?
Right.
Well, I think as time progressed, the expectations and the precision in scores became more and more defined. And as orchestras got bigger and bigger, it became more important that everybody play exactly what was on the page. And it just got lost.
Right.
And I think that's a big loss, because improvisation is an access to a kind of a freedom and an exploration that can't happen any other way in music. And I just happened to be lucky to be born into a family that fostered creativity. And literally, I lived in a kindergarten. My mom ran a kindergarten in the basement of our house, the house I lived in.
Wow.
And so when I was, before I even went to kindergarten, I was in kindergarten. I had a painting room with four easels set to go with the paint sitting there. I had boxes and boxes of toys, Lego, Tinker Toys, you name it, dolls, everything, building blocks, Play-Doh. It just went on and on, and a library of books. So that's what I grew up in. And my parents, you know, were gifted teachers, educators. And I think I don't know if it was intentional, but when I was practicing piano, I would start composing and playing around.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't stop me from doing that.
Mm.
And so I think that's why I can do this, because I just always did that.
Right.
I did the hard stuff too. I did the rigorous stuff and practiced the scales,
mm-hmm.
but I also did that.
Yeah.
And I think in classical training, there's a tendency, if you hear that as a parent that wants your child to do well, or a teacher that's perhaps a little more rigorous in their approach, no, that's wasting time. You don't want to do that. You want to get to the business. You want to get it perfect.
Right.
And so that's my theory. I don't know if that's why I can do it, but I think that might be why I can do it.
That's great. As you're saying that, being a singer first, or that's where my musical journey began, I often hear people say, I can't sing. And people say, you know, how did you sing, or how did you start singing? And I suppose very similar to you, this is why I'm mentioning this, I've fallen into the line now of nobody told me that I couldn't. Because I'm a firm believer that everybody can access their creativity unless somebody says to them something similar to what was said, was not said to you or I.
You know? Yeah, and you hear that so many times.
Yeah.
And it's nonsense.
Yeah. So good for you. So what a delicious environment you grew up in. That's fantastic. So when did you start, like most people who started on piano, you started when you were 5 or 6 or something?
Yeah, I think I was 5 or 6. I wasn't one of those precocious ones that started at 4, you know.
Oh man, you were a whole year late.
Yes.
So I
started around then.
And doing, you know, following the Royal Conservatory of Music.
Yeah. Which I want to point out that I'm very grateful to. It's foundational to what I do. But there was that piece missing.
Yeah. And early on, you just started noodling around with anything that was on the page.
Yeah, started noodling, started composing. Didn't even know how to write it down at first. I found a way to do that. Mm-hmm. And was encouraged, too. You know, like my piano teacher did encourage that.
Wow.
She just didn't teach that.
Right. Well, and that's unusual, too, that she would encourage that. Because, again, you know, my sense from what I hear from people is that, you know, the ruler across the knuckles, all that sort of stuff. So that didn't happen to you either.
No, not really.
Wow. Amazing. So on you went, unencumbered by those usual things, and you're playing and noodling, and life goes on, and you're moving up the Royal Conservatory, going through the repertoire, all the different levels.
So everything's kind of hunky-dory and going along there. And then I get into high school, mm-hmm. and that was a big moment in my life. It's kind of where being a musician, the fate was sealed, so to say. I got bullied when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. That was not expected. It kind of sideswiped me. Mm-hmm. And the thing about bullying that's difficult is not the actual bullying. I mean, I wasn't physically bullied. I was threatened to be physically bullied, but it's the humiliation and embarrassment. It looks like everybody can see this happening, and you just don't want them to, you know, you're just so embarrassed. And so for that reason, I didn't tell anyone. Like, I didn't want anyone to know. So I didn't tell my parents. I didn't tell my family. And so I was suffering with this, you know, this horror of going to school every day. And what coincided with that was my piano teacher giving me a Chopin nocturne to learn. It was the first kind of big piece that I'd ever been given. Mm-hmm. And it was one of his, well, you know, they tend to be quite mellow, kind of sad pieces. And this one was one of those. Mm-hmm. And in that piece, there was just this space to really express that pain mm-hmm. safely. Yeah. And that was really where my heart was stolen by music. Mm-hmm. And I have a special spot for Chopin, of course. That was really foundational to why I'm interested in the nurturing qualities of music today.
Right.
You know? Yeah. So it's not an escape for me now, but it really was, in a way, on some level, a savior for me.
Yeah.
And music can provide that for people.
Yeah.
So that's what happened in high school. And in high school also, there was some exposure to improvisation, and that I was in the jazz band.
Hmm.
And but I kind of sat at the shoulder of an absolute prodigy. The piano player that was the star pupil, you know, she was amazing, Rini Rosnes. Hmm. And so I would kind of sit there and gawk at her and think, I'll never be able to do that. And then the teacher, who was a very good teacher, but had a style, a kind of an autocratic style, a hot temper, would sometimes talk down to the students. I didn't like that. So I was kind of like the quiet, stubborn type. So, okay, I'm not going to give you much, you know. So I just kind of got through that. I lost that opportunity there. Mm-hmm. But I got stuff there too. Mm-hmm. So that was the first exposure to improvising in a kind of a training, you know, way.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I got through high school, it was, well, I definitely want to do music. Chopin had sealed my fate. You know, I was also very interested in art. In some ways, I shone more in art in high school than I did in music.
Hmm.
You know, I won art awards several times throughout those 5 years. But that music, that just was such a pull for me from that experience with the Chopin.
Yeah.
So I went to UBC Music, and it was really more of the same of the Royal Conservatory. You know, it's kind of a traditional school. I got great training. The one creative outlet was composing, because I did composing there. Mm-hmm. But no one talked about improvising.
Well, I was just going to say, like, I never studied at UBC coming from Montreal, but that's from what little I know of UBC. It's extremely traditional and very narrow-minded. Please forgive me to all the people who are listening who may be affiliated with the university in some way, but that's my sense, is they're very, very conservative and strict and regimented.
Yeah, and it's important for us to both realize, certainly in my case, that was back in the 80s.
Right.
So maybe UBC is not like that now, right. But that's exactly my memory of it then.
Yeah.
So I went through that. So, again, all through this, the improvising is kind of in the background. It's kind of like my own secret thing that I do for myself.
Right.
It's like a nurturing, meditative thing that I do and just love being creative. So I was just always doing it on the side.
Right. And And because you've been doing it for so long, you didn't feel discouraged by that not being encouraged, because you had been doing it all along.
Yeah, it's just the way it was. You know, it was just this thing I did on the side. Yeah. I enjoyed doing it, so I kept doing it. Yeah. But it was really just for me. Mm-hmm. So when I got through university, I didn't know what I wanted to do with my music. Mm-hmm. I kind of finished with a lot of doubt about my abilities. You know, because you go into a university situation, and then suddenly there's people who can play faster than you and can play more than you, and there's a lot of them. And so while I was very diligent about practicing and made huge progress, I kind of came out going, well, I don't think a concert pianist is my future. Mm-hmm. I was kind of interested in becoming an accompanist, because I had a real gift for that, mm-hmm. and was encouraged to do that. Mm-hmm. But to be an accompanist, you really need to be a strong sight reader, because you're being thrown in with musicians, and you're kind of expected to be able to play all this repertoire on the spot. And you know, I wasn't really a great sight reader either. Mm-hmm. So I kind of shied away from that. Mm-hmm. And so I just kept playing. And then my dad, you know, retired as a school principal early, and he still wanted to do something. Mm-hmm. So he started up a business along with my mother, creating and selling educational materials, like books and stuff. And I got involved with that, and I had fun with that, because I did the creative stuff. I did the design stuff. I designed the books. I did the artwork for the books. And we ended up creating some alphabets displays that were beautiful. And I designed that. We custom silk screened them, you know. So I was having fun with that, mm-hmm. and still doing music. Yeah. But then my dad retired, mm-hmm. you know, 10 years later, and I took on all the marketing and the sales. So I was doing the whole thing. Yeah. And what was invisible to me is that the music got pushed aside. Mm-hmm. And I got to the point where I could barely stay in the office at 3:00 when school closed. Right. You know, I just had to leave there, and I was so miserable until I had joined a networking group, and there was a business coach in the group, and he kept inviting all the members of the group to come for a free consultation with him so we can find out what he's all about. And I thought, well, I'll do that so I can send, you know, refer people to him. Mm-hmm. So I went into that room for that consultation, and he literally had me in tears halfway through the consultation. Mm-hmm. Because I finally said out loud for the first time, I don't like what I'm doing. I'm not happy doing this. Mm-hmm. And so I signed up with him, and I went back to music in that time. Mm-hmm. And so that was in the form of the Amicus Music Duo, mm-hmm. which I formed with my friend Howard Meadows, who we met at UBC Music. Mm-hmm. We were in the University Singers together and became good friends. And so we started this duo, and he was a clarinetist, and you know, we did the usual things. We did weddings and got gigs in malls at Christmas, did the odd concert that we were invited to play at. Mm-hmm. But then we got really interested in how the context in which you experience music really can have a dramatic impact on how you experience the music. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you're doing things like weddings and stuff, it's pretty deflating, because your background. You know, and there's this sense that you're not really making a difference. There can be the sense that nobody's listening. I know there always are, because people end up telling you that. But the experience is not wonderful. And we do music because we want to make that difference with people. We want that connection and the beauty of music to take them somewhere and make that kind of difference.
Yeah.
And we thought, you know, and, you know, even classical concerts, there's some stuff about that context we don't like either. Like, there's this divide. There's the musician on the stage dressed formally in their black and white, and they walk out onto the stage and they sit formally down and they play, you know, and people listen and they applaud at the right time. And there's nothing wrong with that. But we just thought that's almost like a barrier. So we started doing these concerts that we call In Your Living Room. Mm-hmm. And we intentionally set them up. They were designed to be done in someone's living room or done in a small, intimate environment. And the whole idea with these was to engage the audience in a conversation as we went.
Yeah.
And it made a bit, it made a difference. It really, it, the music had a greater impact on people. They had an appreciation of the music in a way they might not have had before, because they heard something about the composer, about the nature of the music they wouldn't have known.
Yeah.
And they got connected to us too.
Right.
So we thought, we're onto something here.
Now, this is all still classical repertoire.
This is all, yeah. So at this point, it's still all classical. So your question, your timing of your question is perfect, because something happened.
Shoot.
So Howard and I, of course, would be rehearsing every week
right.
at the Roundhouse Community Center. We'd get together and rehearse. And one day I got there early, so I was waiting for Howard, and I was just improvising at the piano, which is something I do for myself. And he walks in and he goes, "What's that?" And I go, "Oh, it's just an improvisation." And he goes, "What? That sounds like a composition. I didn't know you could do this."
Hmm.
And so the game was up then, because then he was on me like, "You got to share this with people." And so I started sneaking them in. You know, when we were doing a wedding, I would sneak them in, you know, because nobody's listening. Right? And I got more and more comfortable with it. And then he and Howard has like an amazing ear, and he could join me. He could improvise with me.
Hmm.
So we started doing it more and more, and it just became more and more prevalent. And then we started bringing it into our concerts. All our concerts would always have some improvisations in them, until finally we did one that was nothing but improvisation, which we called Improbabilities.
Hmm.
And we used all sorts of sources to inspire each improvisation. Like, we had a reading from a poem, we had a reading from a book, we had a painting that a local artist actually brought and discussed with the audience. We had adjectives put on pieces of paper and put in a hat, and the audience would draw three of them, and then we'd play those feelings and moods. We invited the audience to select an object in the room and have a conversation about the object. And it ended up being the ceiling, of all things, in this case, because it was this beautiful carved ceiling. And we had a conversation, and it became something. And then we created a piece out of that.
Wow.
And we thought, we're on to something here. So the next step was, what is next? And we had another violinist friend who was joining us. He could improvise with us after one rehearsal. Went, "Oh, this is amazing." We decided the next thing was to actually shut up. So we've been doing all these concerts that are about talking.
Uh-huh.
But you know, when you go to a concert and the musician plays the piece and then everybody applauds. And it's kind of like you're in this piece of music and this wonderful space, this other world has been created, and then it's cut off.
Yeah.
That applause brings an end to it,
mm-hmm.
or that conversation we have brings an end to it. We thought, what if we just cut all that out and we just had a stream of music
mm-hmm.
that just went on and on for the whole duration of the event?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how Music Oasis came into being.
Mm-hmm.
And we called it the Quiet Hearts Ensemble because Mark, the violinist, was joining us now.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a vision that it could be any number of musicians. And so now there is a fourth musician that joins us now, Anand David. He's a wonderful flute player. And it really works. So it's done in St. Andrew's Wesley United Church, which is, you know, one of the best church spaces in Vancouver. It's one of the biggest for sure. And it has a lovely acoustic.
Mm-hmm.
And we just set up the piano at the front facing the audience, actually, so I can see them.
Yeah.
So it's not about showing off. They don't see my hands.
Yeah.
And then the other musicians can just wander around.
Oh, wow.
Because there's no music and there's no technology.
Wow.
It's all acoustic instruments. And I'm very envious of them being able to move around because I'm stuck at the piano.
Yeah.
But and we just create this musical journey for people, and they come in, and some people pray. Some people are there for spiritual reasons. Some people are just there for a meditational experience.
Mm-hmm.
And we take them on a journey, and we don't know what's going to happen.
Well, isn't that, I've been into St. Andrew's Wesley many times, not as often as you, as I said the other day, but that, you know, for those who haven't been to it, a reverb time of at least 4 seconds, I'm thinking, maybe more, but just, you know, one of those beautiful, big, open, spacious sounds, and wow, I have never heard of that. I've never heard of musicians walking around and filling the space.
Yes, yeah.
Ah, beautiful.
It's a delight for us as much as it is for the audience.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You know, and, you know, it's kind of a crazy time that we do it. It's, you know, at 4:30 on Wednesday afternoons.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard getting an audience at that time.
Who decided on that time?
Well, it's important to point out that it's the generosity of the church. They let us use the space and we give them, you know, 50% of the donations, because it's a by donation event.
Yeah.
And normally you would spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars to rent that space.
Mm.
So they just let us use it. But that's the only time of the week that is regularly available.
Ah, okay.
So that's why it's that time.
Okay. All right. That's a good reason. And I'm sure, you know, as is the case with everything, once word gets out that that's when something's being offered, then you're drawing your audience, right? You're developing your audience for that.
Yeah.
So how many people come on a given?
Oh, anywhere between 10 and 20.
Okay. So not many.
You know, we do it every Wednesday.
Yeah.
But there's room for 1,000, you know,
yeah.
So we do have visions.
Yep. Well, hopefully people listening to this who are in the Vancouver area will make the journey. Now, you had said to me that there's a possibility of a time change, though.
Well, there is. We're going to do an experiment because, you know, the church and, you know, has noticed that there's not huge numbers of people showing up. That's partly a marketing thing, you know, to be honest. But they thought, well, why don't we try a noon hour just to see if that works better for the local businesses, because they could come on their lunch hour and things like that.
Yeah.
So we're going to try that for 2 months, just doing it every other week in addition to our regular time.
Right.
So it'll be on Fridays at noon, starting on the 24th of February. We're just going to see how that goes.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll be surprised.
Yeah. For those of you just tuning in, my name is Nathan Aswell, and this is For the Love of Music, and I'm speaking to Craig Addy, a native BC man, happy to say.
Yes, original.
They do exist. It took me, once every 3 years I run into a native BCer, and here he is, because most of us are from elsewhere. Anyway, Craig is trained as a classical pianist, and improvisation is a big part of what he does, and he's just sharing some projects that he's involved in, the Amicus Music Duo, and now the Quiet Hearts Ensemble. And now, the thing I'm really excited about, telling people about, is your Under the Piano project.
Yeah, so we have to go back in time a little bit.
Okay.
Because a couple things were happening through that whole story I just told you.
Uh-huh.
So the first thing that happened that's kind of the seed of Under the Piano was that when I was that child, just learning to play the piano, my mom was also taking piano lessons.
Mm.
And my mom had taken piano lessons as a child, so she was quite advanced. Like, she was getting towards the end of, you know, preparing to do her ARCT with the Royal Conservatory of Music.
Mm-hmm.
And so she had a love of Schubert and Chopin particularly, and so she would be there playing those lovely pieces. And being a kid, I would, on occasion, crawl under the piano as she was playing. It's, you know, kind of like a fort, kind of like a little hideout.
Yeah.
And it was just so cool, you know, like any kid would do that, right? If they could.
Yeah.
So I did that from time to time. And then I got older and stopped doing it. It wasn't a conscious decision. I just stopped doing it. It kind of faded into the past.
Yeah.
So fast forward to about, I think it was around 2007, about there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'd been kind of caught out improvising by Howard with our duo, and was doing more and more of that and getting really, really comfortable with it. And I had heard about a piano called the Fazioli. It's an Italian piano. It's the new kid on the block.
Right.
And I actually read about it in a book. And after reading the chapter about it, I says, I really want to try one of those. But it was kind of like a dream because they're, you know, they don't make that many of them because they're totally handcrafted from from to the very end of the production of the piano. And I thought, well, someday I'll go to Europe and I'll try one. Well, Howard, my music partner, is walking down Broadway and he looks in the window of this new store that's going in. And on the back wall is this huge sign that says Fazioli. So it was a new piano store called Showcase Pianos that was opening up on Broadway. It's kind of near Toys R Us. Mm-hmm. So as soon as that opened, I was in there like a flash because I wanted to try these pianos. And it's kind of, you know, when you dream about things, you kind of create a picture of what it's going to be like. And then it's not like that, but it's better.
Wow.
That's what the Fazioli's were like, my experience of them. They were not like what I dreamt, but they were better. And so I'm in this store and I'm having a great time playing them. And the owner, Manuel Bernichuk, is such a delight because he's not pretentious in any way. So there wasn't any of these, you know, don't touch the pianos, they're so expensive thing going on there. It was like he wants the whole world to discover these pianos. Mm-hmm. So I was feeling very much at ease. And when I'm at ease, I get playful. Mm-hmm. So I'm in the store and I'm playing. And there's one other pianist in there who I don't know, also playing the pianos. Mm-hmm. And at some point, he's sitting at their big $280,000 concert grand, Fazioli, playing the piano. And what pops into my head? Do you know what pops into my head? I don't know why it did, but the memory of being a child crawling under my mom's piano. Mm-hmm. Well, there was no one else in the store, and as I said, I was feeling relaxed. When I'm relaxed, I'm playful. I says, well, why don't I crawl under the piano? So I warned the piano player that I'd be doing this first.
Good for you.
And I crawled under, and I was, you know, with a 9-foot concert grand, you can lie full length under the piano, which I was. And I'm lying there, and I'm just, you know, remembering that childhood experience, but then also being amazed at the power of the reverberations. Like my whole body is tingling with the vibrations from the piano. Mm. And I'm going, I'd forgotten about that. Mm. And I'm thinking, wow, this is powerful. I have no idea what it's good for, but it's powerful. Mm-hmm. So I go home and I keep thinking about it until about 3 weeks later. I think I want to find out what other people think of this. So I had some friends over to my place, and I didn't have it set up very conveniently, but my piano's there, and I invited them to take turns getting under my piano. And then I just improvised for like about 10 minutes for each of them. And they were the same. They were going, this is amazing. This is not like listening to a piano from across the room. This is like another world. Mm-hmm. And so it's this context, how we experience music in a new context again, is showing up again. How you experience piano music under a piano is not like how you ever experience piano music. Mm-hmm. It's all encompassing. Your whole body is resonating with that music. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of explored with it. And after I did that trial with those three friends, you know, we were just chatting after, because right now I'm just exploring and, you know, playing really. And one of them said, you know what? You should do this as a business. Hmm. And that was when it happened.
Wow.
I thought, yeah, I should. I get to do the things I love. I get to improvise. And I get to get rid of that idea of the audience and the performer. Because when someone's lying under the piano, it's not like you're playing for someone. It's like you're creating together. Hmm. And so it's magical. And every session is a unique journey. Mm-hmm. And how it works is that you don't just come into my studio and get under the piano. No, you sit down and we have a conversation. Yeah. And you tell me whatever you want to tell me about yourself. That can be just mundane things like where you live and what you do for a career, but it can also be what you're dealing with or what you're creating for yourself in your life. Mm-hmm. And I bring that into the music. And I let people create intentions if they want to as well. So if they're really stressed, they might want the music to be more relaxing. Some people have asked for it to be playful and delightful. It's really whatever you want. And then I take them on a journey as they are under the piano. And time stops for most people. There's this often a sense of connection. Either I do it for couples as well. So either with each other or just with something bigger. And deep relaxation. Some people actually fall asleep, even though it's so loud under there. it's quite amazing. And things that have developed out of that are, it's wonderful for pregnant mothers in the third term because the baby hears the whole thing. Mm. And I like it when both the parents come because it's kind of the first experience all three of them can have together. Mm. And I play differently for that. I don't play as loud. I don't play as dark music for that. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, people take away the recording of their session and then they can replay it for the baby over and over again. Mm-hmm. And three different clients have contacted me after to say, you know, whenever the baby gets stressed, we put that recording on and
boom,
calms right down.
Fantastic. Go ahead.
And then the third thing that showed up that was really a real surprise were people who were dealing with grief.
Mm-hmm.
And it really was a surprise. A person came that a friend had recommended her. She was visiting from Toronto and she came. And in the conversation before we started, I just heard this horror story about, you know, losing people to cancer, both a son and a husband in the same year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what ensued after that was not good. And so she went under the piano and it was like cathartic for her. You can talk about things, but music lets us get to those emotions, those unspoken emotions, and can unlock those for people. So I think this is what happens with the people who are dealing with grief.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the most fulfilling thing I do with under the piano. So, I mean, I love any session for anything, but when that happens, you know, you've made that kind of difference. I've seen people come in the most dark space and leave laughing. Now, how long it lasts, I don't know, but at least for that time, it made that difference.
Right. When I was speaking to you about this the other day, you said you have over 4,000 recordings at this point?
Yes, between Under the Piano and Music Oasis, because I record all the sessions.
Mm-hmm.
It's not 4,000 sessions. I mean, a set Under the Piano session is usually 6, 7, or 8 tracks.
Oh.
Actual pieces.
Okay.
So when I'm finished, I break it up into the individual tracks. And the same thing with Music Oasis, we'll have, you know, up to 20 pieces.
Hmm.
So it's 4,000 plus. But I don't even have those. That's what I have in my iTunes. I mean, there's a whole bunch that have never gotten in there.
Wow. So tell me about the breaking up of it then. So you're not playing continuously throughout the time or the performance.
When I say breaking up, I'm talking about the post-production of the music. So there isn't ever a stop in the sound, but there will be an idea that gets explored for 5 minutes, mm-hmm. and then it'll be like the end of a piece,
mm-hmm.
and then I'll start the next piece.
Right.
Usually without even releasing the pedal on the piano, so the sound resonates on, and then I start the next piece.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's not one long continuous piece.
Okay. And
that's what, you know, I take people into a variety of places emotionally. You know,
yeah.
I'll usually go through quite a number of different emotions in a session.
Mm-hmm.
It may be bent towards one more than the other based on what's been had in the conversation beforehand,
mm-hmm.
but.
And do you, funny question perhaps, but it's the Virgo in me, do you find yourself drawn to certain keys, certain modes?
I gave a talk about this recently and that question was asked.
Hmm.
And I don't think I'm as, I'm as sensitive to that as some musicians are. I know some are very much so,
mm-hmm.
but I am drawn to minor keys.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about the colors in that I love. And I tend to play in D minor and E minor and G minor and A minor a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But that may be because they're the easiest ones.
Uh-huh. And what about rhythmically? Are you drawn to certain meters and tempos? And
yes, my music is predominantly meditative in nature, but certainly not exclusively. I mean, that's been shifting quite continuously over the last 3 or 4 years. So there's more and more fast, upbeat music happening.
Hmm.
But yeah, I have like, I kind of see, it's not quite correct to say that everything is literally spontaneously created in the moment. Nothing is pre-planned.
Right.
So I don't know what chord sequence I'm going to use or what rhythmic pattern I'm going to use,
right.
but I have a palette of patterns,
right.
and things that I draw on that get me started. But the joy of improvisation are those unexpected things that happen that we might want to call a mistake, but really actually, if you actually accept them, become an opportunity and an instigator for something that you've never done before.
Okay, so we've talked enough about the music. Let's actually talk about the pieces that you sent. And I just want to remind people listening that all of the MP3s that we're about to speak about, Craig and I, will be on the website page right underneath the MP3 of this interview. So, Craig, you were kind enough to send me four pieces. The first one is Floating.
Yeah.
Tell us about that one.
So that was... the second album that I made.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the first album I did called Soothe was a real breakthrough for me because I'd been wanting to do an album forever,
mm-hmm.
but had all these considerations about why I couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Like the piano's not good enough, the recording studio's too expensive. I would go through these cycles of being inspired to do something and then being stopped.
Mm-hmm.
Until I actually got that it was just, I was afraid nobody would like it.
Right.
So I kind of set aside perfection and walked down to Granville, Tom Lee Music in Granville, and walked into the digital department, piano department, heaven forbid, and was pleasantly surprised about how far digital pianos had come. So I bought one.
So for the non-piano players, can you just, because I know what that means, but can you just
right.
talk about the difference between a digital piano and a real piano?
Well, a digital piano is an electronic recreation of a piano sound. And they've come a long ways at capturing it, but I don't think they'll ever capture it completely because there's so much information missing.
Right.
So, and there's, you know, a couple of different technologies. Roland does an entirely synthesized sound. And then Yamaha and others do what's called a sampled sound. So they actually record real piano sounds.
Right.
And then they put it onto each key at different dynamics. And then they kind of loop the sound so it can continue.
Hmm.
But the problem with that is, you know, every piano has its own unique sound. And when you're playing all those keys at once, there's all these overtones and everything building up that just aren't in a digital piano.
Right.
And it just is not the same. So I was just so dead set against digital pianos, you know, from my earlier experience of them. So I was surprised at how far they'd come.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to say, okay, look, you still have your real piano. It's not like you're giving it up. And this would be really great because they have recording functions on them. You just push record. And you play. So I did my first CD in 3 weeks after buying that piano.
Hmm.
I pushed record and I played and, you know, I can improvise. So I had that stuff in no time. And when I say 3 weeks, I mean in the package, ready to sell. So that was a real breakthrough. And then, so now getting to the track that we're talking about, that was my second CD done with the digital piano.
Mm-hmm.
And, then I want to explore, you know, adding some orchestrations and things like that after I'd done the improvisation. So that's what that one's about. And Floating is actually occurs on the CD twice. The first time is the original improvisation with nothing added. And the one that we're putting it has some orchestrations added to it.
Hmm.
So it was just really literally, when you listen to that, was literally a one cut track. You know, I just sat down and I played it. I didn't know what I was going to play.
Right.
Until I started it, and it worked out, so it got onto the recording.
Right. So this is not from any one of the sessions that where you had somebody sitting on your.
This is actually just a little bit before under the piano started.
Right.
But I was now well into improvising through Amicus at that point.
Right. Okay. So that's Floating, and next we have Sweet Bliss.
A Sweet Bliss is, so my most recent CD is called Journeys Under the Piano.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I did for that is I selected some of my personal favorite tracks from those 4,000 tracks that I've recorded. So that is a real live recording of my actual grand piano. By the way, this is the same piano that my mom played that I lay under.
Oh,
so
how sweet
is that? It's the same instrument.
Wonderful.
And it's not a perfect instrument, but I love it, of course, because we've had quite a journey together.
Now, is your mom still alive?
She is. She's alive and well.
So what's she playing? You've stolen
she's
her
not
piano.
Playing. I've deprived her of
what
music.
What kind of a son are you, stealing your mother's piano? She's not playing anymore.
No, she's
sad.
Not.
Well, why is she not playing anymore?
Well, you know, we've talked about, well, partly a space thing where my mom and dad are both alive and well, living in Qualicum now. Mm-hmm. But we were looking at my digital piano, my Yamaha Clavinet, and I was thinking, you know, I don't know that I need that anymore because I don't use it as much now. Mm-hmm. It kind of served the purpose it needed to. Yeah. So we're thinking about moving that over there, and then she could play the piano.
Excellent.
We'll see.
Good son. Okay. Okay, so sorry, back to Sweet Bliss.
Yeah.
So Sweet Bliss is one of the...
Over the years, I've got all these recordings of Under the Piano, and so I decided it was time to just pick some favorites. I mean, I could make that album, you know, 10 times over, and I don't have time to listen to all the tracks to find my favorites. It's just kind of some that I've noticed and tagged, you know, for whatever reason. So those are the ones I selected from. And so Sweet Bliss was one done, I can't remember what year I did that one, but I do remember the lady, I do remember her session. And I just really liked that one. So it's one of those improvisations that was done for a lady when she came for her Under the Piano.
Beautiful. Wonderful. And next is Wintertide.
And that again is from an Under the Piano session. The same story.
Mm-hmm. One of the ones that got tagged.
Yeah.
One of the ones that stuck in your mind, in your ears, in your heart, for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Lovely.
And it's a darker one, so I like the dark stuff.
Mm-hmm. And finally, you recorded some piano improvisation that you recorded at St. Andrew's Wesley quite recently, actually.
Yes.
Just a couple of weeks ago.
I intentionally thought, well, let's include something from that's recent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the recording situation for that is not the best. It's, mm-hmm. it's not a studio recording, but I thought it would be nice to share something from that so people can get a sense of the space in there. And and that was one I was quite happy with.
Yeah. And it's I listened to a little bit of it before we connected today. And it's just wonderful to hear the reverb.
Yeah.
You know, that's a very, very sweet sounding space. So you have five CDs.
I do.
Purple Patches, released in 2005. Soothe in 2007. Christmas Improvisation, 2008. Quiet Passions, 2009. The Amicus Music Duo, Live Improvisations in 2012. And as you were just talking about, Journeys Under the Piano, some of your best of that you released in 2014.
Yeah.
So what's next, Craig? Where are you going, man?
Well, I want to kind of come out of my box and start playing in places other than Vancouver.
Hmm. Okay.
So I have a dream of doing Music Oasis in great cathedrals in Europe.
Right.
I mean, I don't know how to make that happen, but that would be heaven.
Right.
And I think appreciated in that part of the world as well.
Yeah.
So I'm working towards that. Just actually sat down with a woman who is involved in grief counseling and looking at doing some joint explorations, some facilitated under the piano sessions.
Mm, wow.
So that the conversation that happens before that could be guided by someone who's really, you know, really well versed in those conversations.
Wow.
And then seeing what happens. And then, of course, there would be the conversation after the session with her as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking at that. We're also looking at doing some group facilitated sessions for people dealing with grief. So that points to something that's next for me is more and more collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
I love being taken out of the comfort zone. That's where the magic happens. So I've done, you know, I've been working with artists, painters, and just playing their art. Would love to do that with a performance artist, so we're both improvising
at
once.
Yeah. Well, as you were saying that, the thought that the picture that came into my mind is of a painter listening to someone speak and then them painting and you playing. So the both of you co-creating simultaneously.
Yes. Yeah.
Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah, there's any number of...
Yeah.
You know, something that we explored in Music Oasis for a while was a thing we called Just For You, where we kept the silence and the lack of interruption, but people were able to write down an intention on a slip of paper and put it in a basket next to the piano. And then I would grab that, and then we would create that.
Mm-hmm.
So I love any contribution from outside myself.
Yeah.
You never know what's going to happen with it, but it creates a new perspective from which to create. And I just love that. So I've done work with, you know, hypnotherapists, people who lead guided meditations. Mm-hmm. We did that a couple times now. She led a group of people here in my studio in a guided meditation. And then at the end of that, I then improvised for 15 minutes. And then she would go to each person and ask what they experienced. And it was pretty magical. So anything like that is what's next for me. More of that.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. I want to mention something to you. And before I forget, and who knows, maybe somebody listening will fill me in. There is a violinist. He's no longer alive, a Canadian. And I heard some of what he recorded. He decided to walk the Camino. Maybe you know this. A violinist who decided to walk the Camino, and he brought a small portable recording device.
Mm.
And he made it a goal to play in as many sacred spaces as he could along the Camino. He would walk into these spaces with his violin, improvise for some period of time, and move on. And I heard him being interviewed, I guess it was one of his last interviews on CBC, anyway, they played it after he had passed, and anyway, he was sharing some excerpts from things he'd recorded. So I just have an image of you walking the Camino, and I mean, it would be a different way of doing
piano.
It. Well, yeah.
I get a little envious of people with portable instruments, I must say.
Yeah, well, yeah, you'd obviously be at the whim of cathedrals that are, you know, churches that would have pianos and then, you know, good enough pianos. But anyway.
I have dreams of a hover piano. That would actually be my vehicle.
A hover piano. Well, all right then. Maybe you'll invent it. Yeah. Wonderful. Okay, so let's make sure that we mention your website for people who have listened to you and are saying to themselves, man, I've got to work with this guy. Underthepiano.ca is your site for that. And I got to tell you, I visited the website. I love the picture.
Isn't that beautiful?
Wonderful picture of you playing and someone just in bliss underneath the piano. It's a beautiful shot. Well chosen. And now, what's on craigaddy.com? Is it just all
of
your
CDs? So that's my blog, which I don't contribute to as much as I should, but it's kind of a catch-all for everything I'm doing. So there's a section there about Music Oasis and the Quiet Hearts Ensemble. There's a section for Amicus. There's more under the piano stuff. And then there's just... you know, a variety of things that interest me. Some of them, not all of them music related.
Okay. So we'll, it is my custom always to include all these things on the page where the interview
Right.
and the MP3s will be, so people will be able to find out about all these things. And you've also were kind enough to send me some Facebook links and some YouTube stuff. And you have a video of one of your songs, I think, that you sent. Song isn't the right word, is it?
Yeah, well, we would call them that, even though they don't have words.
That Rising.
Yeah.
So tell me about Rising.
So Rising is, I've kind of fallen off the composer bandwagon because I've become so obsessed with improvising. But I do like to compose as well. And so I have composed a number of pieces. So Rising is a composition, I can't even remember what year it is now, but I wrote it for piano and clarinet, so Howard and I play the piece regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, we wanted a really great piece to end one of our In Your Living Room concerts, and that's how it came into being. All my compositions kind of arise out of improvising. That's how I compose. I just sit at the piano and I improvise, and then something will catch my attention. I think, well, let's make this you know, let's get it on the paper and fine tune it and think about every bar and every note and that sort of thing. Yeah. So that's how it came. And it's kind of a funny that I saw something in that piece, because the kind of the right hand plays this same pattern over and over and over again. But I guess the composer in me knew that I could go places with that, and I did, because it's an 8-minute piece.
Wow.
But yes, there's a. We had a lovely opportunity to go to the Chan Center. We were literally phoned by Manuel at Showcase Pianos. He was at the Chan Center with his 9-foot Fazioli there in the recital hall event, and he says, you know, we've got the videographers here, we've got everything set up, and the piano's here for a couple hours. Why don't you come down and record Rising? Wow. So we did.
Wonderful.
And so that's how that recording on YouTube is there. Hmm. So very grateful for that.
Tell the non-Vancouverites listening about the Chan Center.
The Chan Center is a concert hall that was built up at UBC. Mm-hmm. And it is one of the best acoustics you can imagine. It's actually designed so you can change the acoustic so it's reverberant like a cathedral. I mean, not like a really big cathedral, but you can get that kind of reverberation, or you can adjust it so that it's a drier sound, you know, which is better for, you know, a piano solo recital or something like that. So it's quite an amazing space.
Wonderful. I'm embarrassed to say I've yet to be in it. But boy, I look forward to that. Because, yeah, I've heard nothing but amazing things about this space. So, is that your absolute favorite place to perform, or is St. Andrews kind of, or your living room? What I guess it just depends on what you're doing.
It really depends. I mean, I love the St. Andrews is quite inspiring, because it's, you know, you're surrounded by these beautiful stained glass windows and an atmosphere, and they have a new lighting system in there, so they can really, you know, highlight the architectural features beautifully, and that's quite inspiring. They are ready, and they're talking about it getting. They are ready for a new grand piano there, though. That piano has done its duty. It's hard to keep it in tune, and it gets quite harsh sounding when you play loudly. But that's what we've got, and that's what we use.
And I doubt very much they'll be replacing it with a Fazioli.
No, I would really love them too.
Yeah, I bet you would. Anyway. Absolutely wonderful. Craig, is there anything that you want to say that we didn't get to? Is there anything I've missed, or just anything that's popping up in your consciousness?
Oh, I've after many years of resistance, I've gone back to teaching music as well. Mm-hmm. I did a little bit of it when I was finishing university, and it was fine. But, you know, my knowledge of teaching was basically the very thing that I'm trying to get away from. And I think I kind of told myself, you know, oh, everybody in my family is a teacher. I'm not going to be a teacher. It was kind of this flippant thing that I would say. And yet, it's not really very authentic to say that, because my family is full of gifted teachers, teachers that make a difference. And we've all, I think, most of us are lucky enough to have that kind of teacher at some point in our life, and you get the difference that can make. Yeah. Until just a year and a half ago, I was on an online seminar, and one of the leaders of the seminar was sharing. It was a conversation about coaching and teaching. And he was sharing about when he was younger, he was a professional dancer. And he got so depressed and despondent because he could not find a teacher that was positive. Mm. It would be, what's wrong with your body? What's wrong with this? What's wrong with that? And he was trying to find a teacher that was more positive. And as he was saying that, I suddenly got, even though I loved my piano teachers, they did essentially teach from that same model of going in and looking at what's wrong and focusing on what's wrong. And I suddenly realized, as he was sharing, that I had it, that to teach was to depress. Because that's how I would feel after a lesson sometimes. But because I love music so much, I'd get over and I'd get back to the practice. And I just, in that moment, I realized, well, I don't have to teach that way. And there's this thing that's missing in classical training called improvisation, which is a wonderful tool for discovering the actual structure of a piece.
Yeah. Now, isn't it interesting that you started to equate that feeling with teaching when your initial training didn't have any of that? It was a joyous thing.
Not really.
Yeah.
But it was there enough, you know, especially in the university days, you know, because it's serious stuff. You know, you're trying to get that stuff and you've got only so much time and, you know, you got to put these hours of practicing in. Yeah. And, you know, I just absolutely adored my piano teacher at UBC. Mm-hmm. And I know that she adored me. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I would leave that practice room sometimes really downtrodden. It was just the way that system works.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be that way.
So how are you changing that in your teaching?
Well, I'm literally, I'm going from the music to the notes rather than starting with the notes.
Hmm.
So I'm exploring, like, finding all the little ingredients of a piece before they even know what piece they're learning, and using improvisational tricks, call and response, so they learn those elements and they get freed up about making mistakes. I'm actually asking students to intentionally make mistakes so that they can discover that they're just half a note away from the right note. And that's really interesting, that people really have troubles giving up being right, getting it right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's where the real damage is. Because if you're an improviser, you know that you never know what's going to happen. So if you can embrace that thing that didn't quite go the way you thought it would, it becomes an opportunity and a springboard to something you never dreamed. So that's what I want to bring to teaching, and what I am bringing to teaching.
That's great. So if people want to study with you, how would they get in touch with you? Would that information be on the craigaddy.com?
Yeah, all my contact information is on both those websites.
Okay. Great. And you also included Amicus Music Duo, which is you and the duo.
Yeah.
But that will focus on that, not so much on what you're up. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, all that stuff, as I said, I will post all that stuff along with this. Craig, thank you so much. It's been delightful to get to know you. And again, Shannon, thank you for this.
yes.
You know, it gives me great joy to celebrate people, and I've made it my personal mandate to celebrate Canadians and you know, I'm certainly getting a chance to speak to a number of people in the greater Vancouver area. But anyway, it's just fun. I'm delighted to meet you, Craig. And we haven't met yet face-to-face, but I look forward to that. And boy, I look forward
Same
to
here.
Improvising with you one day, too.
Yeah.
I think it'd be great.
Yeah. Well, you know, Music Oasis is kind of designed that others could join us. So.
All right. I will keep that in mind. The gauntlet has been thrown down. And one day I will joyfully and happily pick it up.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to For the Love of Music. My name is Nathan Aswell, and it is my great pleasure every week to share with you performers who consciously seek to inspire and heal through their music. My guest this week has been Craig Addy, a native BCer, one of the few left in British Columbia, perhaps. And Craig is just a very talented man, classically trained pianist, who also has improvisation as a big part of what he offers. Please check him out at his websites under the piano. I want to make sure I'm saying this right. Underthepiano.ca or craigaddy.com. So you can get a hold of Craig's recordings. You can book a session with him and be one of the lucky recipients to be under the piano, or perhaps you would want to study with him. So a number of different ways that Craig can serve you on your way. And whether you're listening in real time or somewhere down the line, thank you very much for tuning in. I hope this last hour has been as much of a joy for you as it has been for me. So love and blessings to you on your journey. And thank you again, Craig.
Thank you.